Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. This time, we're heading back to the book of Genesis.
Okay.
Chapters 46 and 47, to be exact.
Right.
Where we're going to unpack this really pivotal moment in the story of Joseph and Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story of, you know, family reunion, but amidst all this famine and exile.
Yeah.
So our source material is this lecture.
Okay.
That really digs deep into, like, the historical and thematic layers of the text.
Interesting.
Offering some pretty fascinating insights.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, I mean, this reunion is kind of sets the stage for the entire future of the Israelite nation.
Oh, for sure.
It's like we're not just watching some family drama play out.
Right.
We're seeing, like, the very seeds of the Exodus story being planted.
Wow.
And the beginning of this really complex relationship with Egypt.
It's all starting with Jacob's journey to Egypt.
Right.
And it's just fascinating how he makes this really deliberate stop at Beersheba to offer sacrifices, just like his grandfather Abraham did back in Genesis 22.
Oh, I see. So this parallel isn't just some random coincidence.
No, definitely not.
It's like this really powerful reminder that Jacob is, you know, consciously following in the footsteps of his ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
He's seeking divine blessing, guidance, before this massive transition.
Right.
You know, it's like a legacy of faith being passed down.
Totally.
Generation.
And God even reassures Jacob, saying, don't be afraid.
Right, right.
Which is a phrase that echoes throughout the entire Bible, you know? It's almost like a message for us, too.
Absolutely.
Facing our own unknowns.
Yeah, like it speaks to how timeless these stories really are.
For sure.
They offer comfort and guidance.
Yeah.
Even thousands of years later. Think about it.
Hmm.
Jacob is leaving everything he knows.
Right.
Venturing into a foreign land during a time of crisis, no less.
Yeah.
Yet he chooses to trust in this promise, this hope for a better future.
It's powerful. And that hope is tied to his descendants.
Right.
His family line.
His legacy.
And the text really meticulously lists Jacob's genealogy.
Does it?
Emphasizing the number 70.
Okay.
Now, 70 people may not seem like a lot to us now.
True.
But it's definitely more than just a headcount. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, exactly. The ancient Near East.
Yeah.
The number 70 often represented like completeness.
Oh, interesting.
Or divine favor.
Okay.
So when we see 70 descendants of Jacob entering Egypt.
Yeah.
It kind of signifies like the totality of his family.
Wow.
All 12 tribes accounted for.
Wow.
Carrying this promise of becoming a great nation.
But, okay, so the text initially lists 66 descendants.
Okay.
And then we get to 70.
Mm-hmm.
Is this like some kind of biblical math problem?
Well, no, not exactly.
Okay.
It's actually a testament to the meticulous detail.
Oh, wow.
And internal consistency of the biblical account.
Oh.
See, two of Jacob's grandsons had died earlier.
Okay.
And Joseph has two sons born in Egypt.
Go.
When you factor those in, the numbers align perfectly.
Oh, wow.
It's like a puzzle where every piece has its place.
It's amazing how these, like, seemingly minor details add so much depth to the narrative.
Right.
And then there's Joseph, like,
yes,
the mastermind behind the scenes, orchestrating his family's well-being in Egypt.
He's not just reacting to events.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he's strategically planning for the future.
Yeah.
When he presents his brothers to Pharaoh, he really emphasizes their occupation as shepherds.
Why is being a shepherd so crucial?
Oh, good question.
It seems like, I don't know, a pretty ordinary job.
We see in ancient Egypt, shepherds were considered, get this, detestable.
What?
I know, right?
Wow.
Because of their association with livestock, which were, you know, sacred to certain Egyptian gods.
Oh, wow.
So this cultural clash actually works to Joseph's advantage.
Okay, I'm starting to see his strategy unfold here.
Right. So by highlighting their profession, Joseph ensures his family will be settled in Goshen.
Okay.
Which is a land, you know, separate from the Egyptians.
Gotcha.
It's a clever move to preserve their cultural and religious identity.
Oh, wow.
Protecting them from assimilation.
So he's playing the long game.
He is.
Ensuring their physical survival and their cultural integrity.
Exactly.
It's like he's anticipating these potential conflicts and safeguarding his family's future.
Exactly. And this leads to one of the most striking scenes in the whole story.
Okay.
Jacob's encounter with Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
You have this, like, powerful ruler.
Yeah.
Embodiment of earthly authority.
Right.
Yet it's Jacob who blesses him, not the other way around.
That's such a fascinating power dynamic.
It is.
Like, what message does that send to the listener about spiritual authority versus, like, worldly power.
It's a powerful statement about the source of true authority.
Yeah.
Jacob, despite being in exile in a foreign land,
right,
possesses this spiritual weight that even Pharaoh recognizes.
Wow.
It suggests that true leadership transcends political power, that it's rooted in something deeper, something perhaps even divine.
And Jacob, reflecting on his 130 years, notes they were few and difficult, especially compared to his forefathers.
Right.
It seems a bit odd to bring up hardship at what should be like a celebratory reunion.
Right. This statement, while seemingly negative, might actually have been a source of encouragement.
Oh, okay.
The future Israelite slaves in Egypt.
Oh.
It's a reminder that even the patriarchs
faced
trials and tribulations, yet God remained faithful.
So it's a message of resilience.
It is.
A reminder that hardship doesn't negate God's promises.
That's right.
It's a powerful lesson for anyone facing their own challenges.
Absolutely.
This story's already full of twists and turns.
It is.
I'm really curious to see what happens next.
Me too.
We left off with this amazing reunion and strategic land acquisition.
Right.
And this unexpected power dynamic between Jacob and Pharaoh. But the famine's still going on, right?
It is.
How does Joseph, with all his wisdom, handle this ongoing crisis?
Well, this is where Joseph's administrative genius really takes center stage.
Okay.
He implements this three-stage plan to ensure the survival of the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
A plan that even today sparks a lot of discussion and debate.
Okay, so let's unpack this three-stage plan.
Right.
What does it look like in action?
So first, he collects all the money in Egypt and Canaan.
Wow.
In exchange for grain.
Okay.
It provides immediate relief, but as you can imagine, money eventually runs out, especially in a prolonged famine like this.
Right. People can only trade money for food for so long.
Exactly.
So what happens when their pockets are empty?
Well,
they can't just starve.
This leads to stage two.
Okay.
Where the people offer their livestock to Joseph in exchange for food.
Wow.
It's a pretty heartbreaking situation.
Yeah.
Imagine having to sacrifice animals that were likely more than just livestock.
Right.
You know, they were probably sources of livelihood, companionship,
mm-hmm.
maybe even part of their family tradition.
You can just feel the desperation in that exchange.
Yeah.
These people are giving up essential parts of their lives just to survive.
And it raises some interesting questions
about
the choices people are forced to make in these extreme situations.
For sure.
But it's important to remember that Joseph isn't acting out of self-interest.
Right.
He's trying to preserve life, managing a nationwide crisis.
It's a balancing act, isn't it?
It is.
Meeting immediate needs while also trying to ensure long-term survival.
Exactly.
So money's gone, livestock is gone.
Mm-hmm.
What's left?
Sadly, what's left is themselves.
Oh, wow.
Stage three sees the Egyptians essentially selling themselves into servitude to Pharaoh.
Okay.
In exchange for food and land.
Servitude. That's a heavy concept.
It
feels almost unsettling,
even
considering the context.
It is a complex and ethically challenging situation.
Yeah.
However, we have to look at it through the lens of ancient Egyptian culture.
Okay.
This wasn't seen as outright enslavement as we might understand it today.
Okay.
It was more of a temporary arrangement for survival.
Gotcha.
A way to ensure people didn't starve.
Right.
While also providing a workforce to maintain social order.
So it's like a social contract born out of desperation.
Yes.
A way to weather the storm collectively.
Precisely. And within this system, Joseph displays remarkable foresight.
Okay.
He doesn't just address the immediate need for food.
Mm-hmm.
He plans for the future.
Oh, wow.
He instructs the people to plant seeds, ensuring a harvest once the famine ends.
That's fascinating. He's not just reacting to the crisis.
Sure.
He's already thinking about recovery and rebuilding.
Exactly.
He's a true leader.
And to ensure societal stability, he makes a special exemption for the Egyptian priests, freeing them from servitude.
Why this special consideration for the priests? What makes them so important?
In ancient Egypt, priests played a crucial role.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't landowners.
Okay.
They relied on the support of others.
Right.
And their function was seen as essential for maintaining spiritual and social order.
Gotcha.
Joseph, recognizing their significance, ensures their continued well-being.
So it's a recognition of their cultural and spiritual authority, even in the midst of this upheaval.
Exactly. And despite the hardship, the Egyptians recognize Joseph's wisdom and leadership.
Mm.
They even say to him, "You have saved our lives."
Wow.
They see him as a conduit of God's provision and mercy.
It's a powerful testament to his character.
It is.
He could have easily exploited the situation.
Right.
But instead, he chooses to act with compassion.
Yeah.
And strategic foresight.
Absolutely.
So despite this bleak period of famine,
mm-hmm.
there's a glimmer of hope.
There is.
A sense that something greater is at work.
Yes, and that hope is deeply rooted in the promises made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Their descendants were destined to become a great nation.
Mm.
This challenging period in Egypt is a crucial part of that larger narrative.
It's like a refining fire.
Yeah.
A period of testing that will ultimately shape their identity
right.
and prepare them for their destiny.
And amidst all of this,
yeah.
Jacob, nearing the end of his life,
mm-hmm.
makes a powerful request of Joseph.
You're referring to his insistence on being buried in the promised land,
right.
Canaan, rather mm-hmm. than in Egypt.
Yes.
Even in exile, facing death.
Right.
He clings to that promise.
He does.
That deep connection to his ancestral homeland.
It's a profound testament to his unwavering faith.
It is.
He doesn't want his final resting place to be in a foreign land.
Right.
But in the land God promised to his family.
Wow.
It foreshadows the future exodus of the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
A return to their roots.
It's amazing how the story weaves together these themes of family, faith, leadership, and even national identity.
Right.
All against the backdrop of this ancient world.
And it's not just an ancient tale.
Right.
These themes resonate across cultures and time periods.
They do.
Offering valuable insights into the human condition.
You know, it's incredible how this story, even though it took place like centuries ago,
I know,
still feels so relevant today.
It does.
We see these themes of leadership, resilience,
mm.
family bonds,
yeah.
faith, yeah. all intertwined in this epic narrative.
What's particularly fascinating is how this story, specifically Joseph's journey,
yeah.
mirrors elements found in other religious and philosophical traditions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of parallels are we talking about?
Well, think about Joseph's role as, like, a savior figure.
Okay.
He rescues his family and the Egyptians from starvation.
Right.
This act of redemption,
mm-hmm.
of rising from hardship to bring about positive change.
Yeah.
Echoes the concept of salvation found in various faiths and philosophies.
That's true.
Yeah.
Even his personal story,
yeah.
facing betrayal, enduring hardship, and ultimately rising to a position of power.
Yeah.
It has a familiar ring to it.
It does. It resonates with those classic hero narratives,
mm-hmm.
those stories of transformation and triumph over adversity
right.
that we find throughout history and across cultures.
It's like a universal archetype.
It is.
The idea that suffering can lead to growth,
mm-hmm.
and that even in like the darkest of times, there's this possibility for redemption
yeah.
and positive change.
And this story kind of invites us to explore those deeper connections.
Okay.
To consider how these ancient narratives
mm.
might illuminate our own understanding of leadership,
yeah.
sacrifice,
yeah.
and the complexities of the human experience.
So to sum up for our listeners,
yeah.
we've journeyed back to ancient Egypt.
We have.
Witnessed a heartwarming family reunion,
yeah.
uncovered brilliant strategies for survival, mm. and pondered the meaning of true leadership and spiritual authority.
It's been quite a journey.
What a journey through Genesis chapters 46 and 47.
It has been.
And speaking of enduring hope,
okay.
Jacob's final request to be buried in the promised land
yeah.
leaves us with this really powerful image.
It does.
It begs the question, where do we place our own hope in the face of challenges?
If you were in Jacob's shoes, facing exile and uncertainty,
yeah.
what would you cling to?
Mm.
Would it be like the familiar comforts of the present?
Yeah.
Or would you hold on to the promise of a future return?
Right.
A return to a place that represents not just a physical location,
mm-hmm.
but a deeper spiritual connection.
It's a thought-provoking question.
Is
it's one that invites us to consider our own sources of hope and resilience.
Absolutely.
Well, that's it for today's deep dive.
Yeah, it's been a good one.
Until next time, keep thinking, keep questioning,
mm.
and keep diving deep into the world of knowledge.